Well, it's hard to believe we're only 3 weeks away from the festival season as we begin the fall holy days. This will be, for me, my 48th Feast of Tabernacles, 48th festival season. And in just a few weeks, 3 weeks, we'll be keeping the Feast of Trumpets. It pictures the return of Christ. We know that it's more than just a trumpet that's blown. It pictures much more than that. But at that last trump, Jesus Christ will return and establish that government on the earth. Unfortunately, that holy day for some over the last few years has been confusing, has become a confusing situation. But it doesn't have to be, because God reveals what's going to take place through these days. He says, then on the Day of Atonement, Satan will be bound. He'll be restrained for 1,000 years, bringing in a time of peace. And the world will have an opportunity then to have a relationship with God that they couldn't have before. And then we come to the Feast of Tabernacles, one that many of us are preparing for as we get ready to go different parts of the country or different parts of the world, something that we look forward to with great anticipation. It pictures that millennial setting. It pictures a time when Christ has returned, the government is on the earth, it is established, Satan is bound, and it is a time of peace. What will that be like? Is it possible to even imagine to a small degree what that time is going to be like? The answer is yes, because God gave us the command to keep the feast, and the command of being there, he also gave us a command to tithe. Both commands make the feast possible, and both show us something special about the world tomorrow and about what it is going to be like. There are things we learn even from the very command itself and from tithing and from the opportunity that God presents to us at the Feast of Tabernacles. I want to talk about the command to keep the feast for just a moment. Decades ago, I have been told by some that they were instructed that we are only required to keep the first holy day and the last great day, and the rest were not required. They're similar to spring holidays. They say on Days of Unleavened Bread, we don't have to meet all 7 days of unleavened bread. The command is to eat unleavened bread. And so they were told, or they thought they were told, that the days in between were not commanded. And again, we know that's simply wrong. The 7 days of the feast and the last great day are not optional. God commanded us to keep them. And in understanding how they are kept, we gain a better understanding of the feast itself. Even today, we have individuals who skip the feast or skip days during the feast to go to Disneyland or Legoland or other activities, and they miss parts of the feast. And some who skip the last great day, well, I want to miss traffic. Traffic's bad. It's a weekday. I want to miss the traffic, so I'm not going to be there the last great day. Others have told me that, well, in the past, we were told that only those who are tithing are commanded to be at the feast. So if you're not tithing, you're not commanded to be there. Or if you don't have a tithable income, you're not commanded or required to be there. And again, just like the Sabbath day, the holy days are a test. God wants to see, are we going to follow those commands or not? Are we going to follow the command to be there? And again, unless there's a health reason, or if we're ill, or if we're physically unable to attend, there are limitations that individuals are not able to always be there. Last year, we had one pastor make the analogy at the feast, because individuals had been missing for various activities. Our attendance stayed steady pretty much through the feast, but we had different people there each day as attendance kind of fluctuated a little bit. But he made the analogy, and he says, the millennium is 1,000 years long. We're here keeping the feast, which pictures this 1,000-year period. Each day of the feast is represented roughly by 143 days. If you divide 1,000 up by 7, you have just under 143 days. So he said each day represents 143 days during the millennium. Which 143 years of the millennium do you want to miss, or are you willing to miss? Now, they'll miss a day of the feast, but they don't think of it in putting it in that perspective of it's representing a time period of 1,000 years of peace, and you miss a day, you're not just missing one day of the feast, you're missing one day of what it pictures and what it means. And again, we don't get to choose to miss. God commands us to be there, and there are things that we gain from each day of the feast. So we put it into perspective. Deuteronomy 16, verse 3 says, "You shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days." It tells us 7 days is the number of days that we are to be there and to keep it. Let's go to Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus chapter 23. And verse 34. Leviticus 23 and verse 34. He says, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, 'The 15th day of the 7th month shall be a feast of tabernacles for 7 days to the Lord. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. And for 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. And on the 8th day you shall have a holy convocation. And you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. It is a sacred assembly, and you shall do no customary work on it.'" And so individuals, again, from the past have said, well, since only the high days, the first day of the feast and the last great day are holy days, then that's all that's required. Verse 37, he said, "These are the feasts of the Lord which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations." He said all of these feasts that he had mentioned, not just the Feast of Tabernacles, but all of these feasts are holy convocations, they're holy gatherings. He said, "I'm gathering my people together to follow this command. To offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, a burnt offering and a grain offering and a sacrifice and a drink offering, everything on its day. Besides the Sabbaths of the Lord, besides your gifts, besides all your vows, and besides your freewill offerings which you give to the Lord. Also on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered the fruit of your land, of the land," which is the other part of what we'll discuss, "when you've gathered the fruit of your land, you shall keep the feast of the Lord for 7 days. On the first day there shall be a Sabbath rest, and on the 8th day a Sabbath rest." Now notice the instruction as we move forward, because it says not only are we to keep these days, but he says you are to reside there. Verse 40, "You shall take for yourselves on the first day the fruit of beautiful trees, branches of palm trees, boughs of leafy trees, willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. He said, you are to go out and you are to prepare a place that you're going to stay in for that whole 7 days. It wasn't a matter of, well, I just need to find one for the first day and find one for the last day. He says, no, you're preparing a booth. You're preparing a temporary dwelling. "You shall keep it as a feast unto the Lord for 7 days in the year. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations, and you shall celebrate it in the 7th month. You shall dwell in booths," or in temporary dwellings, "for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, and that your generations," and then here's the lesson from this, "that," or "so that, your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths. When I brought them out of the land of Egypt, I am the Lord your God." He said, I want you to know by the experience that you have of living in a temporary dwelling, you realize this life is temporary, that you're not going to get caught up in the world, that there's a time separated. He said, for 7 days, it's a temporary dwelling, and you're going to live in it, and you're going to live in it in the place where we're celebrating this festival. I'm sure you hear much more about that as we get closer to the feast, but it's clear that it is a commanded assembly, and it is for that 7 days. We learn from obeying it and keeping it, and every year as we keep these festivals, and every single festival, we should be learning more, gaining a deeper understanding of what they mean. We learn from how we keep it, the commands of how to keep the feast, because it's not just a matter of keeping it, but it's how we keep it as well, and from the way we keep it. And which is very similar to how, but there is a method to keeping the feast that God describes. And when you follow it, it gives you a greater and deeper understanding of what these days mean. And it gives us a greater picture when we're looking at the Feast of Tabernacles, what that millennial period is going to be like. We'll look at the command for second tithe, and I'll focus on that as we move forward in the message. And second tithe is spelled out much differently than the first tithe. It's very clear differentiation between first and second. I want to go to Deuteronomy chapter 14. And we're going to look at the second tithe, because not only are we commanded to be at the feast, but God commands us to tithe. He commands us to set aside a second tithe so that we can be there. And not just that we can be there, but so that we can understand the meaning of these days. Deuteronomy 14, verse 22, it says, "You shall truly tithe of all the increase of the grain that the field produces year by year." And we know it's not just a vegetable tithe. I've had individuals tell me over the years that, well, only people who own land and grow things are required to tithe. And I said, well, then how would you be at the Feast of Tabernacles? How do you save that money for the feast? Well, you don't have to. And I said, no, God clearly commands. And when we refer to this second tithe, we realize he's talking about this festival tithe. But he tells us that we are to keep this tithe and to hold on to it. And it is so that we can keep the festival. Now, we generally send in one-tenth of our second tithe as we save it up, and especially now as we're getting closer. Individuals have asked over the years, do we still do a tithe of the tithe, or do we send in a portion of our tithe to pay for the sites around the world? There's some more valuable information on the feast when you go onto the feast pages. And when you bring up the feast.cogwa.org, it has articles and things that are talked about. And it does discuss the tithe of the tithe, or what we've come to refer to as a tithe of the tithe. It says, each year there are expenses that the church incurs and that are uniquely related to the Feast of Tabernacles. There are charges for renting auditoriums and equipment, sponsoring activities, and other costs. To cover some of these expenses, the church in the past suggested that members who are able to do so contribute 10% of their festival tithe to help cover these costs. This became known as the tithe of the tithe and was used exclusively to help cover the cost associated with the Feast of Tabernacles. Rather than have to cover all of these expenses from the normal tithes and offerings of the people, the idea was to use festival tithe to cover festival expenses. Now, if an individual has saved 10% of their income and they've had a very low year, if they took out 10%, they said, well, I'm going to send in my tithe of the tithe, but now I can't be there. That's not what this was for. It says, if you're able to send that 10% to be able to cover those costs, and many of us are, then we contribute what we can. The festival tithe is a wonderful blessing from God to enable us to come before Him and to worship Him. And again, He commands us to be there, but He commands a way that we are able to be there. And it says, when we do it God's way, we have no regret or worry. And we can truly rejoice before Him at the Feast of Tabernacles and worship Him and learn to serve Him in many ways. It says, when we do it God's way, we have no regrets or worries. One of the things that we covered at summer camp this year in definitions and descriptions of integrity was, with integrity, there are no worries or regrets. And I explained, because if you are truthful and if you're honest and if you are a person of integrity, you don't fear, well, I'm going to be found out. I'm going to be caught. I'm not going to have what I need because I didn't do what I was supposed to do. When we follow through, when we do it God's way, there are not regrets and worries. Now, there's times where, and I've been there as well, where you save for the feast and you go, I still don't have very much money to go to the feast, but I'm not going to miss the feast. And with that, there was no regrets or worries. What would happen if individuals didn't save their second tithe or their festival tithe? Well, again, there would be fewer sites to go to because there would be fewer people, less people being able to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, but you'd have individuals who couldn't afford to travel or go to the place which God has chosen. God provides the means of keeping the feast. Deuteronomy 14, verse 23. He says, "You shall eat before the Lord your God in the place which He chooses to make His name abide. the tithe of the grain, of your new wine, of your oil, of your firstborn and herds and of your flocks. And why? That you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. He says, you go to the place which you're supposed to go. You follow the command to be at the feast, and you eat the tithe, the grain, the wine, oil, firstborn of the herds and flocks. And he says, you follow those two commands so that you learn to fear the Lord your God always. So we keep the festival wherever God chooses to place his name. And we've talked about that in the past, that it is interesting to watch as we come up with ideas for festival locations or suggestions come in and we check it out and it looks like it's going well. And then all of a sudden doors are closed and another door comes wide open. And it's very obvious that things are to move a different direction where God is choosing to place his name. And we pray about that. We fast about it. We ask God to direct us in where those locations should be. But God chooses to place his name there. The word place, according to Strong's Exhaustive Concordance, when we look at the Hebrew, it says in the place which he has chosen. It is a word that means the lodging, the dwelling, to abide, or to reside. He said it's where God is residing. It's where God has put a temporary dwelling. It's where his tabernacle is for that period. He is residing there, where he has chosen to reside or place his name. And when we keep the feast, God is abiding there with us for those 7 days and the last great day. Now it tells us that we are to eat before the Lord your God. And again, that's also a misunderstanding that some have had over the years. Some have clearly kept that and rejoiced in the way that it is done. But others have a misunderstanding of what it means to eat there before the Lord. So is eating all that tithe is to be used for? I've had an individual say, well, all you can use tithe for is, yes, you got to buy your housing, but all you can use the rest of it for is for eating. Now, eating's a nice part of the feast. I will admit that's a wonderful part that I enjoy. Some of the fine meals, the steaks, the food. And again, but people have wondered and worried over the years, am I spending my second tithe right? Am I using it for the right purposes? Some have spent all their tithe at the feast because they say, well, it says you shall eat up there before the Lord, and it's to be done at that location. So they get to the feast and they spend it all. They make sure every last dime is spent. And then we've had individuals come and say, I don't have money to get home. That's causing some problems and not spending money wisely when we spend it all. We have to plan it out. We have to make sure that we have enough to get to and from the Feast of Tabernacles, enough to pay for the final bill of our hotel when that time comes. But planning the trips out and planning those things, and sometimes individuals plan side trips on the way to the feast, which is great. It makes the feast special. There's a quote that deals with the direction of individuals and deals with making goals and succeeding in life. It says, it's not just the destination, it's the journey. And the Feast of Tabernacles, and many of you have already been experiencing this, you're getting excited now. You're thinking about what's going to take place. You're thinking about the different places you want to eat. Every spring, we think about the places that we want to go for the feast. But it's the journey. It's traveling there. It's preparing. It's getting excited about what we're going to experience when we get to the feast. I want to look at this word eat. And again, the misunderstanding of you shall eat it there before the Lord. Individuals thinking, well, it's only consumables. It's things that you have to eat and consume only at the feast. This word eat in the Hebrew, again from Strong's Concordance, to eat means to burn up, to consume, or to devour. Doesn't just mean physically eat, although we do consume and we do devour at the Feast of Tabernacles. It's one of the blessings that we have. But God says we're to save that festival tithe and then we consume it. We use it. We eat from it. And we spend it on what we want. And there's lessons we learn from tithing just as there are lessons we learn from keeping the holy day, from obeying that command, there's lessons we learn in the way that the tithe is spent. Sometimes there's guilt when an individual buys something for themselves at the Feast of Tabernacles. They say, well, I know it's whatever my heart desires, but I bought this, and now I feel guilty because I bought it for myself, and I'm going to have it after the feast. It's not just going to be something I enjoy at the feast. I'm taking it home, so now I feel guilty. Or somebody says, well, it just seems extravagant. I could never afford this during the year, and now I've bought it. Now I feel guilty that I've bought something that I couldn't normally afford. And they feel like they're being wasteful. God wants us to enjoy the fruits of our labor. And in fact, he commands us to rejoice and enjoy the fruits of the labor by following that tithing principle. And this is exactly what he wants us to do with it, to enjoy it. And again, if we have enough to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, if we have enough to be there, then by all means, if we have the money and we desire something, he says to rejoice in it or to rejoice and buy it. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 24. If the journey is too long for you so that you're not able to carry the tithe. Now, again, looking at the agricultural community that it was, you have 10% of your crops. And most people didn't take their crops with them or that 10% of their crops. All right, load up the wagon full of corn and let's go to the feast. If all you ate was corn during the feast, it'd be a little bit disappointing. No, if you're not able to carry the tithe to the place which your Lord your God has chosen to place his name there. And I like the way this is added here. It says, when the Lord your God has blessed you, he said, you followed the command, you're now working it out, you're getting ready to go on this adventure, you're ready to keep the feast. And it says, when you have been blessed by God. God blesses us as we follow that command. So he says, you exchange it for money. King James Version says, turn it into money. And you take the money in your hand and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. For most of us, money is what we have. That's what we get paid in, or digits on a computer, as it's deposited into our accounts. But money is what we have. And what should we do with that money when we receive it? Here, in an agricultural community, their money came in at usually one period of time, the harvest, the early spring harvest or the fall harvest, and that's when they gained their income. And they were to bind it, to hold it up. And again, what should we do when we receive money all year long? That is our income, is money. Well, it says we are to bind it up. And the word, according to the Hebrew, for binding is to confine. Now, when we think, well, somebody's being confined, it's put in one place and it's not going anywhere. To beset, to besiege, to bind up, to fortify, to enclose or lay siege on, or to put up in bags. So it says when they were gathering their income or their increase and they turned it into money, it says bind it up. Put it somewhere where it's not going to be lost or used. And again, when do we turn ours into money and when do we use it? Do we use it when times get tough? For us, since we have money all year long and it is bound up, it's either in a bank account or some put it in a box in their home. When times get tough, it is not a time to say, well, I've got this here, I'll pay it back. It's not when we need a break to get away during the year and we say, well, you know, this is for my pleasure. It's to spend on what I desire, so I'm going to go take care of one of my desires. It's not during the year when we want a nice meal out. He says you're to bind it. You're to hold it. Reserve it for a special time. And it's during the Feast of Tabernacles in the place which he has chosen. Now, can it be used for other festivals like trumpets and atonement? After atonement. Yes, it can. Because God has chosen to place his name there. It is a festival. And some are actually traveling at that period of time already, heading to the Feast of Tabernacles. But it can be used for those other times. But you don't want to spend it all on the spring holy days and on all these other days and not be able to keep the feast. Again, it takes planning on our part, but it is to be spent only in the place which he has chosen. Now, some over the years have dipped into their second tithe during the year, only to find themselves not able to go to the feast. And so God says, bind it in your hand. Do not let it go. Don't use it until those appointed times. Sometimes we have difficulties in our jobs or a slow year, and maybe we don't have the income or the increase that we normally have. And I've been in those positions as well. But God has always provided a way to go for those who want to keep the feast. If you really want to be there, you will find a way. Just as individuals, even with the Sabbath day, who live hours from church, who say, nothing's going to stop me from keeping the Sabbath or driving to church services, I will be there. And we see that God blesses them tremendously for that. But we do have festival assistance in many cases for those who have diligently saved or saved what they were able if they do not have a tithable income. We have festival assistance to help those who are in need. In the early summer, we ask for anyone who has festival assistance needs, anybody who is requesting help, and in most cases, we're able to help all of those who truly need the help for the feast. Now God gives us an explanation of what that money is to be used for. He says, bind it up. I want you to hold it. I want you to use it for the Feast of Tabernacles. And so we save it all year long. And most of us are excited by the time feast comes around going, there's things that I normally can't get or things that I've been wanting through the year. And now I can get these things and prepare for the Feast of Tabernacles. Even buying things now and setting them aside saying, at the feast I get to open this up, I get to use it. You may get a new suit or a dress or shoes, preparing for the Feast of Tabernacles. And again, understanding what it means to eat it in the place which he chooses. You get a new outfit and you're saving it and you get to the feast and use it doesn't mean, well, I can't use this again until the next feast. No, you purchased it. You purchased what your heart desired. You used up and consumed the tithe, the increase, the savings that you have been holding. But that doesn't mean that we can't bring certain things back. But it gives us an explanation of how that money is to be used for. Now, we know it's not the same as the tithe that goes to the Levites, where we give it to the Levites and they decide how it is spent. Second tithe is much different. Verse 26, it says, you shall spend that money for whatsoever your heart desires. Not just for food, not just for housing, but it says whatever your heart desires. King James Version says, whatever your soul lusts after or whatever it desires or longs for oxen, for sheep, for wine, for similar drink, or for whatever your heart desires, you shall eat it there or you shall consume it there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. But the things we buy there, we can bring home. How many of us are going to buy an ox at the feast? A sheep, maybe a lamb chop. We don't have to, in the society we live in, we don't have to go out and buy a sheep and say, guess what? For the next 7 days, we're eating sheep. Every day. No, we're able to spend that on food as it is stating here very clearly, or strong drink or other things that we enjoy during the feast. We don't buy an animal or sheep or an ox and eat that for the week. So he says it, or the money, is to be consumed there. It's to be used up there before the Lord your God. And again, a different tithe than the one set aside for the work. You shall eat of the tithe of the corn, the wine, the oil, and the firstlings. There's another command, and it ties in with the ability that we have to buy those things that our heart desires, to buy fine meals, and to enjoy particular foods. The command is, you shall rejoice, you and your family. Now, if we haven't saved our tithe the way we should, it's difficult to rejoice. I remember growing up, and had a stepfather who wasn't a part of the church, and when it came to the feast, we didn't have very much tithe. Makes it hard to rejoice, yet we still went. And amazingly, with almost nothing, you can still rejoice. But God commands us, and he set up a system that he commands us to be there, and even if we're low on money, we follow that command in whatever way that we can. But God commands us that we set aside a tithe, the tithe of the increase, and he commands that we consume it at the feast, and he commands that we rejoice. And yet people have looked at this and said, what an overbearing God telling us that we have to keep these festivals. One who would command us to save money and spend it on ourselves and whatever our heart desires, to learn about a time of abundance, to have all of this that we have saved for the year, we've kept it, we've held it up as we were commanded, and then to spend it on ourselves in the place which he's chosen to place his name. God's way of life works, and he provides the needs that we have, even to keep the command to be at the Feast of Tabernacles. Deuteronomy chapter 16 and verse 13. Deuteronomy 16 and verse 13. You shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days after that you have gathered in the corn and the wine. After you've gathered your and saved your tithe throughout the year, we go to observe the feast. And we're told to observe it for 7 days, and the 8th day is a separate day, the last great day. Verse 14, you shall rejoice in your feast, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, and the Levite and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates. Now, within your gates means within your control. But he says the entire family is to keep it. Anybody who is with you, you are to provide for that they can keep that feast. The Hebrew word for rejoice means to brighten up, to make glad, to make joyful, to make merry. It commands that we are joyful and cheerful and that we rejoice during the feast. Verse 15, 7 days you shall keep a solemn feast to the Lord your God in the place which he shall choose. Some have looked at this and came to their own conclusions. Well, it's supposed to be a solemn feast, so yes, I'm rejoicing, but I don't want to get too excited. I don't want to go out and spend money because I'm supposed to be keeping a solemn feast. Why is it solemn? Most people look at solemn and say, well, it's just sober, it's serious, it's not a time to let loose, not a time to keep things in that way. But the Hebrew word is the word Chagag, a C-H-A-G-A-G, and it means to move in a circle, to observe a festival, to be giddy, to celebrate, and to dance. That doesn't sound like, oh, I need to be serious and I need to be sober during the feast. He says, be giddy, celebrate, dance. Interesting, when you dig in deeper about moving in a circle, it is to do something in a repetitive way. Year after year, you celebrate and you keep a feast that you're rejoicing in year after year, following that same circle, or to observe a festival. You're there to be festive. You're there to rejoice. Notice something else that is given to us with that festival. Tithe, verse 15, it says, because, and we rejoice, we keep it 7 days. It is a solemn feast, a time to be giddy. Because the Lord your God shall bless you in all your increase and in the works of your hands, therefore you shall surely rejoice. He said, I want you to be happy. I want you to be festive because I have blessed you and your increase. Not only have I blessed you with being able to use the tithe of your increase, but I've blessed your increase, so now your tithe has grown. It's multiplied. I have blessed your increase, and therefore you shall surely rejoice. You can rejoice even more. And not only because we're told to tithe on that increase, but God says, I'm going to bless it more and more. Second tithe guarantees that we will be there. It doesn't matter if, and some have said, well, California, the cost of living is so high, so many people can't afford to go to the feast. If you could afford to live in California, the feast site has places that are affordable to go to if you have saved the 10% of your income. So what is it for? And why is it so important for us to be there? And why is it important for us to save that tithe and use it? We'll look at a few meanings behind the feast. And it does give us a description of the time that is ahead for us. But the Feast of Tabernacles pictures a very special time that's going to take place. A time of restoration. Acts chapter 3 and verse 19. Acts chapter 3 and in verse 19. He says, "Repent you therefore, be converted, that your sins may be blotted out, when the times of refreshing shall come from the presence of the Lord." A time of refreshing. Barnes notes says this time of refreshing is any kind of refreshment or rest or deliverance from evils of any kind. When we're talking about a time of restoration and a time of refreshment, it is a deliverance of evils, and we see that in the descriptions of what the feast itself is, what the millennium period will be like. The millennium, symbolized by the Feast of Tabernacles, pictures a time of restoration. How many of us need a time to rest from trying to make ends meet? From working on the schedules that we do and fighting traffic and doing all the things that we do on a regular basis, that for 1 week, a period of 7 days and the last great day, to go to the Feast of Tabernacles and be refreshed. I just talked about coming back from just a couple of days with the pastors from the region. To be able to spend that time together, very refreshing, very exciting. God says, for his people, I want you to do that for 7 days. It is a time of refreshing. It is a time to be together. It is a time to focus on the future. Individuals trying to make a living in a corrupt world that we live in, we see how difficult it is to live in a society that is crumbling and the world needs refreshed. Verse 20, "He shall send Jesus Christ, which was before preached unto you, whom the heavens must receive until the time of the restitution of all things, which was spoken by the mouth of his holy prophets since the world began." Barnes mentions of the time of restitution of all things, to restore all things to its former situation. What is it that's being restored? What is it that's being restored back to its former setting? The way it was in the Garden of Eden, the tree of life, the way it was at the creation, Adam and Eve having all their needs taken care of. They didn't want, they weren't scrounging for food and trying to find what they could to survive. It was a blessed time, and it was a time of abundance. And we see God referring to the time that is ahead as being like a garden. Genesis chapter 2 verse 5 tells us that every plant of the field before it was on the earth, and every herb of the field before it grew, the Lord God had not caused it to rain upon the earth, and there was not a man to till the ground. But there went up a mist from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground. God had a way of providing for Adam and Eve. They didn't have to till the ground. It was mist coming up from the ground, watering, providing. And this is a future time that pictures everyone being able to live in an environment that provides. Isaiah chapter 11 and verse 6. The reason I mention these changes that are going to be taking place and the restoration to the way things were is because they're being restored to a time of being fruitful, productive, and abundant. And that comes by having the tithe that God has told us to keep, so that we, in a small way, can do that even in today's society. Isaiah chapter 11 and verse 6. It says, the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, the leopard will lie down with the young goat, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze, and their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play on the cobra's hole, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the viper's den. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the seas. This is another aspect of being there and keeping the feast for the period that God has called us and told us to be a part of. It represents a time in the future when the entire world is going to be keeping these days. For when the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the seas. And every day of the feast, we gain more knowledge, more information about what that time is going to be like. And again, we should not miss what God has provided for us. Micah tells us about the future. It says, but they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, meaning there's going to be abundance. Everyone will have their own production. None shall make them afraid, and the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. Fear will be taken away. War will be taken away. This phrase, under the vine and under the fig tree, is interpreted by many translations as a time of prosperity and protection. The fig tree provides shade from the sun as well as fruit. The vine provides nourishment and food, but is a time of prosperity and protection. And again, we understand that that's what these days that we keep at the Feast of Tabernacles mean. There are many passages that show what the millennium is going to be like. Over the next month or so, you're going to hear quite a bit more about that particular time. But every year when we keep the feast, it's a reminder of what is coming. It shouldn't just be, I'm going to go there, I'm going to spend my money, and I'm going to enjoy it, and then, okay, can't wait till next year. The focus should be, I want to go there and I want to enjoy it. I want to learn as much as I can. And I'm excited about the future. I'm praying more and more that the kingdom of God will be established on this earth. And that millennial period will begin. Focus on the future. When we go to a designated feast site, in which God has chosen to place his name, and when we use that tithe for travel, to pay for hotel, for nice meals, when we enjoy the activities and the things that we're not able to afford the rest of the year, and when we consider that we have 10% of our increase, 10% of our annual income, we have abundance. And it doesn't matter what income you have. If you have 10% of your income for a year, then it's an abundance that you don't normally get to have. We're able to experience a better life than what we have the rest of the year because it's used within that period. And God designed the tithe and prepared and designed it in that way, that we would have an increase. And no matter what level of income, you're experiencing an abundance more than you normally have. And God's way of life affords us opportunities that otherwise are not presented. Over the years, we've had times of plenty and we've had times of lean. The feast has always been a reminder that there's something better. Had the opportunity to travel to various parts of the world. And sometimes when you talk to individuals, and I've talked to many individuals that have never traveled outside the area that they live in, some within 5 or 10 miles of where they live. And they're like, well, how can you afford to travel around the world? How can you afford to go to all these exotic places? You couldn't unless you follow that command and you do what God commands you to do, and God provides a way to be able to do that. But it's a choice to keep the commands of God, to save that tithe, or to eat at various restaurants, 5-star restaurants, and people don't understand, well, how can you save that much money? How can you afford to go 7 days to whatever part of the country? Well, because God commanded it and God provides. And not only did he provide, but he increases your income where you have even more. But the choice is yours. Individuals in the past, and it's sad, even talking about first and second tithe, when they were told they didn't have to tithe any longer, and they said, because it's your choice. It's your choice whether you tithe or not. You're not commanded that you have to tithe. It's your choice. individual that had tithed for 40 years. So I never liked tithing anyway. I'm so glad that's done away with. So glad I have a choice now. And I thought, and at the time I was a teenager, I thought, wow, you had a choice all along. They never learned why they were tithing. They never understood the principle behind it of, why am I doing this? Not just I'm doing it because I'm told to, but understanding all the principles that tie in with God says you are commanded to keep the feast, and you're commanded to tithe so that you can keep the feast. But you're also commanded to tithe because I want you to spend it on yourself and understand the principle of why that money is there and to picture something that's coming in the future with a time of abundance. God tells us in Deuteronomy 30, verse 19, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you. I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Those choices have always been there. God says, I command you to tithe. He said, you have robbed me. I command you to tithe. The choice is still there. I've set before you tithing and not tithing. He doesn't make us do those things. But he says, choose life that both you and your seed may live. So he gives us the instructions on how to live our lives, but the choice to do it is ours. And to what degree and to what faithfulness we will follow those choices. But he said if we live the way he wants us to live, then we will receive blessings. If we don't, there are going to be curses that come along with it. The law of blessing and cursing. And here's one way of life and the results, and here's another, but he says you choose. So again, particular ways that we're able to enjoy that second tithe. And there are multiple ways that we're able to enjoy it. But whether with travel, whether it be going to San Diego, Victoria, Orange Beach. We have 300 going to Italy this year. Many exciting places around the world that individuals are able to travel to. But it is because of opportunities that the feast has provided. Dining out, enjoying nice meals, steaks, desserts, drinks, your favorite food, all of these things help us to learn to fear God more. Learn to respect the God who has created and provided and commanded us that we are to be a part of something now and future. And again, we do it in moderation. We don't say, well, it's whatever my heart desires, so I'm eating chocolate for 7 days of the feast. Every day I'm eating one of the giant Hershey's chocolate bars because that's what my heart desires. Well, your heart might desire it, but your stomach may not be able to handle it. You have to balance those things out. Enjoy some things. Enjoy some nice chocolate. But again, we have to eat in moderation, drink in moderation, and too many rich things can cause individuals not to be able to finish keeping the feast. So we do things in moderation. And we get the sleep that we need. Well, my heart desires, because I haven't seen these people, I'm going to stay out till 2 or 3 in the morning because I just want to spend so much time with them. And then you see at services they can't keep their eyes open and they're missing out on the knowledge. As the knowledge covers the earth in the future, they're missing out on the knowledge that's provided here. We do what God says, and God says, I'm going to reward you for it. And sometimes the feast is the only time where we get to enjoy particular foods or particular meals. Some make it a point specifically, the Feast of Tabernacles every year, I get this particular meal because that's my favorite meal. Prime rib, filet mignon, baked Alaska, Cherry's Jubilee, all those nice things, Dom Perignon, whatever your heart desires. But these are the finer things, and they teach us, again, what this time pictures. Being able to experience and have things that you don't normally have the rest of the year. Even if somebody's well off and they enjoy a lot of the finer things all the year long, at the Feast of Tabernacles, they have 10% of their income, and it may seem like an overabundance. And as a child growing up, every time they said, if you have excess second tithe, and my family always looked at each other like, excess? How do you have extra second tithe when you struggle to even make it to the feast? But if there's excess second tithe, the contributor is able to help. Or having abundance to where you take others out, or at dinners you say, I want to get it, I've got the opportunity now. Through the year, I may not have the opportunity to buy dinner for people, but now at the feast, I've got the abundance, I want to do that. And again, it allows us to share in a time of abundance. Notice Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 17. Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 17 gives us further description of how this time period is to be kept. You may not eat it within your gates, or may not eat within your gates the tithe of the corn, of your wine and oil and firstlings of the herds and flocks, nor any of your vows which you vow, nor your free will offerings or heave offerings in your hand. He said, don't use it at home where you normally are. That means we have to go somewhere. We have to be somewhere. And again, it shows us that life is temporary. Even the point or the meaning of dwelling in temporary dwellings or dwelling in booths is to show us this life is temporary. It's going to have blessings and it's going to have abundance by living God's way of life. You're going to be able to experience wonderful things, but it pictures a time future because this isn't where it's at. God commanded individuals to dwell in booths, and he reiterates that fact. It's temporary. Verse 18, you must eat them before the Lord your God in the place which he should choose, you and your son and daughter, and your manservant, maidservants, and again, all of those that are within your gates. But God gives us another way to use that second tithe for treating family members, for treating friends, or strangers that you meet at the Feast of Tabernacles. There were years, again, of lean. And when I say lean, very, very lean. But by the help of the brethren, a low-funded feast became very rewarding and very blessed. Again, brethren helping brethren to be able to keep the feast. Much like what we read in the book of Acts, where all had need and they contributed and helped one another to be able to be there and to have their needs taken care of. Individuals have done that in the past. And when you go there and go to the feast and you keep it as you're commanded, you're going, we may have to eat. And I mentioned buying a sheep and taking it. I will say there was a particular year where my family didn't have the funds to go to the feast. I again mentioned because the relationship that we had with my stepfather, but we went to the feast anyway. We had a camper on a pickup truck that in Lake of the Ozarks, many people stayed in the campgrounds right outside the meeting place. And my brother and I were able to go to the feast with very limited funds. And so we grabbed a couple of our chickens, laying hens, and took them to the feast and boiled them, cooked the chicken the first time because the camper doesn't have a very big oven. And that's when we found out old laying hens don't make very good chicken. I think it would make good jerky, but not chicken. So here we are, we're eating these things and having peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for the first day, and then invites and come over to our place. We have a giant meal. We want you guys to come and eat with us. And so we had abundance throughout the feast. And again, God's people taking care of one another, providing for one another, is something that we can do, whether we have money or whether we don't, to be there and to keep that feast. Were you blessed exceedingly during this last tithe year? Then we can help someone in need. We can take someone out for a meal, buy special gifts. Remember those who are less fortunate, the poor, the widows. Preparing something for those who aren't able to go, and we have for years, if individuals not able to go, preparing baskets for individuals who couldn't make it to the feast because we want to make their feast special. And again, we're able to do that because of the abundance that God's provided us for. So the feast is important, and God wants us to be there. Just as he says, I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursings. Choose life. He wants us to be at the feast. He says, I want you to keep the feast. I want you to go where I've placed my name because I've called you and I want you there. And he's made a plan so that we can keep it and experience a little bit of the millennium, even for a short period of time in this life. To know what it is to have physical and spiritual blessings and to have abundance at this time. It is a foretaste of the world tomorrow. It's a foretaste of a better time, a time without war. And we know when we go to the feast, you're still going to hear about disasters around the world, wars and things that are taking place. But among the brethren and being there every day and hearing messages, your focus is not on what's going on in the world at the time, for the most part. It is focusing on a future time. So as we prepare for the fall holy days and the Feast of Tabernacles, we are to enjoy the blessings that God gives us in his command to keep the feast days and his command to tithe so that we can be there. And he says, rejoice. It's a time like no other. You are to rejoice in it. And he said, all of these things, as we do these things, we learn to fear the Lord our God.